with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and Andy Serling is going to join us. Thanks to Chris Hyde and to Diana. It's been too long since we had that conversation. And, one thing I did not stress enough that Chris was hinting at, or more than hinting at, it is the disingenuousness of the supposed animal activists. They don't want. They don't want this to pass, because if it does, it's one less thing for them to, you know, tug heartstrings over and with their, you know, with their appeals. It's a moneymaker for them. So they're really not interested in the actual welfare of the horse in this case. Because it puts money in their pocket the longer a legislation like that languishes. So I hope you picked up on that. Andy Serling joins us. Good morning.
That is like when I get introduced into one of your diatribes.
Well, this is one. This is a diatribe you can get behind. I'd like to think, you know. It's, you know, anti-slaughter. It's as we just discussed. It's an easy thing for everybody to agree on, you would think. Andy, coming off of a good weekend, obviously the Sunday postponement pushed the racing into Monday, and Busanda yesterday, and you fold in the coverage. Another Saturday of America's Day at the Races. It was a good Saturday.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it.
What did you make? Let's start with the Withers. And it's always interesting when these three-year-olds are asked to go beyond the mile and the 16th. It's a transitional distance.
Well, I mean, I think the Withers is probably a comparable race to the race the week before at Gulfstream, right? Well, that was a mile and 16th, but I mean, from an aesthetic standpoint,
yeah.
Two kind of more horses, right?
Yeah.
I mean, both, they ran the same, I mean, they got the same buyer fig, doesn't mean they're the same horse, but they both, you know, beat somewhat suspect competition, beat them very easily, and feel like they're moving forward, but they're still both significantly behind a lot of horses. So, you know, I think it's a question of whether or not you believe, whether it's the case with Greatest Honor or the case with Risk Taking, that they can keep moving forward and move forward enough to be competitive, you know, in the big races. I think both horses, you know, they're both horses that look like they'll relish distance and that'll work for them, but it's that old adage, you know, they can all get the distance, just a question how fast. Well, these will probably get the distance faster and better than some horses, but is that going to be enough? And I mean, at this point, you know, Risk Taking, like a horse like Greatest Honor, is a real prospect. But I don't think anybody is mistaking them for favorites at this point in Triple Crown Trail. But that doesn't mean that can't change. But they, you know, Risk Taking, I thought Risk Taking was fine. He won easily, and you know, did what he was supposed to do, as they say. But he's still going to have to get better if he's going to beat the best horses, you would think. But he might.
That's the fun part about this is trying to watch, and you know, this is a horse that took three starts to break his maiden and did it at a mile and an eighth, and obviously, you know, has made progress since, you know, the turf try in November and then the maiden breaker, and you know, 82 buyer breaking his maiden, and you know, now steps forward to an 89. So I mean, he's doing it timely.
Identical. When you look at, I mean, Greatest Honor obviously, you know, ran better when he first started, but if you look at their last few races, there's a similarity, right? They both step forward when they, you know, in a bigger race, and it's a question of whether they take a step forward their next start. I mean, I think the chat indicated they wait for the wood. Obviously, Klarovich has highly motivated for the Gotham, and he's not going to cut back risk-taking anyway. So, while, as he said, the usual, you know, we'll keep all our options open, I think it's fairly reasonable to assume that we'll see him in the wood. And, you know, and of course, you know, assuming highly motivated run well at a mile and feels like he can get longer distances, you know, maybe they separate them and take him to a race like the Bluegrass, as highly motivated did win that race at Keeneland already. But there are always all these possibilities. But, you know, that's in a perfect world, that's where they go. That means that highly motivated wins the Gotham and they both stay sound and they both keep moving forward. All a lot of ifs in a world where ifs often translate into the negative, not the positive. But in a perfect world, that's, I assume, how it would work out. You know, I mean, highly motivated, obviously, of the two, he's been the more brilliant one. Whether or not he ends up being effectively being a router is a completely different story. You know, you take the talent of highly motivated, you put into the pedigree and the risk taking, then you've got a real, you know, then you've got a horse you have more confidence in. But that's, you know, that's the way it's always the case. I mean, a lot of the more brilliant horses are, you know, distance always becomes a question with them, right? You know, so we'll see. I mean, he's obviously highly motivated, a very exciting prospect. That Keeneland race where he got, I think, the biggest fig they gave out for any of the two-year-olds all weekend. And a lot of horses have come out of that race and run very well out of it. So that's a very legitimate effort. And I think he's grown some. And so he'll, you know, we'll see what he does in the Gotham. But not a bad tandem to have.
No, not at all. And this one out of a distorted humor mare by the name of Runner Risk. And her third foal, and a breakthrough for her.
She was a turf horse. I think her last victory was, I think it was August. It was in August of 2013. Rusty Arnold trained her.
Yeah, yes, because it's a Watts Humphrey bred the colt.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's a promising horse, but it's, you know, once again, he has to get better. But I don't think, you know, that's why these people that need these definitive opinions, you know, months away from the Derby, it's sort of foolish, you know, and I think that really came to a head with that, the preposterousness of the whole Bezos thing, a horse that hadn't raced and was 26-1 in the Derby pool. It was a friend of mine said, who's fairly sharp, I don't know, this before he ran, I don't know if he's 26-1 to be in the Derby.
Exactly.
You know, they just assume his horses. And it's funny with Bezos. I mean, I'm not in California, but certainly heard from a few people, particularly knowledgeable people, before the race that there was a lot of hype about a horse that wasn't necessarily as good as the hype. So, tough game, you know? Even if they are piped up and hype's legitimate, doesn't mean it turns out that they can do it on the racetrack. A lot has to go right, and a lot more can go wrong. No matter who you are.
No doubt. No doubt about that. And I'm just looking, you mentioned the mare of this Runner Risk. This is also she herself, sister of a couple of really nice stake winners. El Crespo, that Rusty trained as well, I think. And Ray de Cafe, I think, was a Rusty turf horse.
Ray de Cafe definitely was.
Yeah.
Well, I remember who trained. I'll take your word for it, Rusty.
I'm pretty sure it was an APND colt 10 years ago. So it's a nice family.
The last time she won a race, a Klarovich Chad Brown horse finished fourth. The world goes full circle.
That's pretty funny. Well, certainly, you know, certainly that performance resonated, and I don't want to limit the action from the weekend at Aqueduct, but it partnered up, of course, with the Tampa Bay action. And what'd you think of the Sam Davis result?
It's hard to know, you know. The winner got an 85 buy. It's hard to know with the winner. I mean, it's not easy to go from 6 furlongs to a mile and a 16th and come back a winner. It's hard to be particularly excited by anybody in that race, but considering it was the horse's third start and stretching out from 6 furlongs, a very promising effort. You you know, whether or not, once again, he's able to be effective going longer and he's able to improve significantly is another question. He seems well behind the best horses at this point. You know, that was a field that was a big field, but it wasn't, you know, once Todd's horse didn't run particularly well, that was kind of strange how he was so far behind. And, you know, Dale's horse just completely back to the field. I think it, you know, it significantly lowered the expectations of the race. I don't want to knock the winner. It's, you know, like I said, to do what he did is not easy. And he's obviously a very nice horse, but we'll see. He's got even more ground to make up on the others, you know.
Yeah.
But it's the third start, so, you know, who knows? He's got a pretty good trainer, so, I mean, I'm not going to discount, you know, I'm not going to, you know, you look at the three horses, right? Greatest Honor and Risk Taking, and then Candyman something.
Rocket.
Candyman Rocket. Oh, right. It's Frank Fletcher, the Rocket, right?
Yes.
And that's cool. He's got some nice horses. You know, you got Sugar McGee, Chad Brown, and Bill Mott. So he's certainly got the right guys for these horses to get better. It's early. The thing is, it's early, but it's still less than 3 months to Derby. It's a lot of time to Derby and a little time to Derby. You know, I think that, you know, you also have to realize that these are all people that if they don't take that step forward in their next start and they don't look like they're legitimate Derby horses, I think every one of these trainers and connections would be okay with taking a step back and saying, let's take more logical steps and think about a race like the Travers is our more realistic goal.
Right.
So, you know, it works out. I don't think, you know, all of these guys would love to win the Derby in two of their cases again, but all of them are fully capable of being realistic. And I'm not saying that they're not all Derby horses. They may well prove to be Derby horses, but I don't think any one of them is going to run them in a race just because it's the Derby, unless they feel they at least have some kind of chance.
Well, the sequence again on Saturday when it came, Andy, to the cross country, another challenging exercise, and talk a little bit about the other stakes. That Suncoast kind of morphed after the two favorites both scratched, but the turf races were reachable, certainly. Counterparty Risk, nice way to start her campaign. And how about Tom Bush and yet another Get Stormy, that nice Get Smoking.
Yeah, and he rated, which is something I don't think he'd ever done successfully, or, you know, at least at that level. Yeah, no, I mean, it starts to, you know, you look at those three-year-old turf horses from a whole series of races in New York,
right,
and even California, and you see how Colonel Liam's obviously done well to start this year, and Get Stormy wins that race, and it's a, hopefully, you know, with others on the bench, you know, we haven't seen, is it Gufo and Domestic Spending, so it gives some hope that there's some new blood for the turf division. That, wow, does that division need some new blood? It gets a little stagnant. I think we saw that a lot last year. So hopefully that's encouraging. The horse in California,
yes,
Mike McCarthy, straight, something straight, what is it?
Smooth like
straight, right. I mean, he doesn't seem like a horse is going to be better in the longer races, but you have to think they're thinking, well, I imagine they're going to the Kilrow, but
they
after
are.
That, maybe they're going to Keeneland with him for the Makers 46 if it works out. And I know that Whitey likes to go to Kentucky, and he's done so well when he shipped there and Oakland as well. And, you know, I don't know what Christophe is doing with Decorated Invader, though obviously he disappointed later in the season, but I think, if, you know, as distances get shorter, he has a chance to sort of redeem himself as well. So it's nice to see some of these, you know, last year's three-year-old turf horses, they stick around in ways the turf horses don't. And I think there's some promise that division could get some really well, you know, much needed new blood.
Well, that Kilrow, you know, yesterday we had both Tom Bush and Dan Blacker to talk about his win that hit the road, who really.
Not familiar with that.
Watch that Thunder Road later when you get a chance from Saturday.
And is Tom Bush going to run out and ship out for the Hill Row?
He was more inclined to he mentioned it, and but he also, you know, grade one and all, but this is a gelding, so he's right. just as likely to kind of tread water and point for the makers.
Right. Makes sense.
But
no, they can see Tom with that horse. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Excuse me. He's a cool horse. I mean, you know, he always showed up in those races. You know, he had just the one win, but he was a very, very honest horse last year. He never ran particularly badly in those races. He ran very well a lot of them. And he showed up in every one of them. And he usually was losing, so he never got really that much attention, but he was really running well in all of them.
Agreed.
And continuously outrunning his odds. I mean, if you look at him, he's probably the biggest overachiever from an odds standpoint in any of those races, right?
That's fair. And you know, and I tell you, he got bet on Saturday, 4-1.
Well, he showed him bet.
Yeah.
I
blew it with him.
I mean, it was a play. If you felt he could race, he was a very logical horse.
That's the key.
Know, if he had done it, I mean, Gray's Creek obviously had promised, but he had to improve. I like the horse that ran horribly. That 10 horse. So Diaz got him in great position. Actually, nothing fancy liquor. He was awful.
The maker.
I mean, he gave him a great trip. He just didn't run at all.
One thing we should mention, because of course he's spending the winter down there, Junior Alvarado is spreading his wings down there.
Well, I think he has Nick Tamaro to thank for his success. He started off very slowly, but as soon as Nick went on Twitter and declared that Junior was sort of struggling down there, I think he spent about 30% since I was on Twitter. He said it to me. We were laughing about it. It is amazing. We all do it all the time. You mentioned that, like, so-and-so hasn't won a while, and they win
yep.
two races in a row or something.
Yep.
And Nick was right. I mean, the truth was Nick wasn't wrong. I think he had, like, a couple of wins at that point. But, my God, I mean, I looked at him the other day, and he's, like, gulching me something like 25-something for 140. He's been, but I was thinking, he's probably winning over 25 to 30% of his races since he started out slowly. Junior's a good rider. I think he's a good rider. And I'm always happy to see him do well. I root for the home team.
What about that? What about Counterparty Risk? What do we take away
from
that?
We decide that her name. Well, I mean, she had various names during the race. I'm just trying to be clear. That's the all-time funniest race call I think I've ever heard. She's okay. We'll see. She's going to have to get faster, too, but she's obviously promising. I mean, I'm not, you know, I always want to see those horses do well for Chad and for Seth, but, you know, she's okay. We'll see. The race is going to get tougher. She's going to get tougher trips than the one she had this weekend, right? But, you know, she's another horse. What'd she race, four times?
Four times.
Yeah, and that was a great spot that Chad found for a great stake win, and she's got a nice pedigree, and so she's, you know, she's a very valuable horse because of her pedigree and the wins and such. But, you know, I mean, these horses are running, he's run three times, and she's already running buyer figs in the high 80s, so there's no reason she can't step forward, but she'll have to.
She's
grade ones running those races, but that doesn't mean that she can't improve.
I know they didn't go very fast, but she actually didn't leave her, you know, she didn't leave herself. Johnny didn't leave her too much to do either. She stayed, you know, she stayed in contact.
Well, that was the key. Johnny got positioned with her. I mean, that's the concern, you know, even though there was the one speed, it was sort of overmatched. You know, was she going to, you know, the mock horse, who was her only real competition, had a little more speed than she did. And I thought Johnny did an excellent job of getting her in position.
Yeah.
And then the speed horse helped by drifting out three paths. I heard Junior wasn't too happy about that.
Hmm.
Not that I blame him, but he might want to get angry when they do it to him in New York too. I get it. But listen, the second horse is you have to say is promising as well for Mach. He seems to be improving.
That was New York Girl.
Yeah. Listen, the winter has been a lot of these cases about seeing some of these horses and who's going to step forward. And a lot of what happens in the winter you know, is sort of mildly save the table as we get closer to Keeneland. And as we know, I'm not in any way trying to discount like good racing at Oaklawn, and they have some very good racing, but the bigger races start happening in April. You know, whether you're talking about even big races at Oaklawn, but also at Keeneland, and Aqueduct starts revving up, so the New York season starts revving up. I mean, California is different. Obviously, they have some very big races there in the winter, but as far as East Coast racing, you know, east of the Mississippi, the bigger, you know, the rest of it is just sort of setting things up. I see Maxfield's running at the Fairgrounds this
yes.
weekend. We're covering the Fairgrounds races on the...
Oh, good. Good, good.
And we're on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. I'm not on Monday. I'm off Monday. But they're doing the Southwest from Oaklawn. We're doing all the Oaklawn and Fairgrounds. I looked at all those Fairgrounds stakes. And, you know, looking forward to those. Like to see, there's an interesting matchup in the Rachel Alexander, the race before the Risen Star, because you've got the 1-2 finishers from the Goldenrod.
Yes.
Going against horses that ran 1-2-3-4 in the Silver Bullet Day, the prep down there. I really like that. Look at PP's here somewhere. I don't mind digressing for a minute. I really like that pull from Cavorting. She drew the rail in the rail. Clarier,
yeah.
Yeah, I really like her. I disagree with people that feel that Travel Column had a much worse trip than she did. I think I understand what people are saying about Travel Column, but the reality was her break wasn't really that bad, and it didn't really matter because the race fell apart. So the fact the crowded start's nonsense. I mean, it's true, but it's not really of any major significance. And since the race fell apart, the fact that she was in the back of the pack helped her. It didn't hurt her, and she didn't lose considerable ground because they didn't happen to break. And I think you can argue that Clarier, and I'm not saying that Clarier ran a significantly superior race, but I prefer her out of the race. Clarier made the earlier, wider move, while Travel Column saved a little more ground and made the last move. And I understand people look and they say, oh, well, Travel Column couldn't find room top of the stretch. You know, she had the weight and ultra course and hang around. Okay, all that is true, and she showed a very professional quality in her third start. But it was also happening that she was the last mover in a race where you kind of wanted to be the last mover. And I just think I like Clarier more with more upside. I think she's run well in both of her races. I think they're both good, don't get me wrong, but I prefer Clarier. And I think they're significantly better than the horses that ran the Silver Bullet Day. Though I think Super Sensational, whoever decided to take her back to last when she was controlling speed in the paceless race, I don't know, but you know, maybe they'll be a little more aggressive in here. She's got a better position. And Zoom Up, Tom Ames' horse, not bad either. She's a little slower, but I thought that allowance race that she won wasn't a bad allowance. A lot of horses that in that race scratched out the Silver Bullet Day were horses that could have been contenders.
No, it's a nice, in fact, the whole card is terrific. There's a bunch of great races before
the
stakes.
I agree. I mean, I'd be interested to see where they run where they run Wells Bayou here or Oaklawn. You know, here they face Maxfield. There they face the other another Godolphin horse, the Sidham horse, right? The horse that won the Jim Dandy. He's the speed at Oaklawn. I don't know. Sort of affects both races. Imagine Dale Romans is hoping that he runs at Fairgrounds. So he's lone speed with Mr. Freeze in the Razorback, I think, at Oaklawn. But and the Risen Star is an interesting race. I mean, do we have any ideas? Keep me in mind running here, or is he running at Oaklawn?
Yeah, I think you won't know that until they draw the Monday card.
All right, we draw that on Friday.
I would think that they stay at Oakland.
I'm not a fan of that horse, so you know, but a lot of people are. A lot of interesting subplots in the Risen Star. I mean, obviously the horses that ran the LeCompte got big figures. And is it possible this pays a little bit of honor for Midnight Bourbon? I know that. I'll believe that when I see it. And Senior Buscador, who was so visually impressive, obviously against lessers, but he's going to come here and face a tougher field. He's going to run without Lasix, and he needs to stop getting left in the gate. That's not something that's going to work for him going forward. The race gets tougher. I think he's obviously a very promising horse. And Carrillo, the horse they paid a crazy amount of money for off of, sort of okay debut. I mean, I know he won his first start going a mile, but wow, they paid like $870,000 or something for him.
Yeah, they paid top dollar, and I do see that actually, you know, Greg Tremontin, the auto dealer from Baton Rouge, he was on the, you know, the line. He signed the ticket, but I do see that. Yeah, Joel Politi came in, and Britland Stables came in, and so Tom marshaled the barn forces.
Well, that's the day for horses that sold for exorbitant amounts of money at the Pompous Bristol. I see Turned Aside, who sold for just an otherworldly $725,000, is running in the Colonel Power earlier in the day.
In
wow,
the sprint.
That's a crazy price to have paid for him. I wish them all the best of luck. I do, and obviously I'm always rooting for Tom to do well with Carrillo. I'm stunned when I heard those prices.
Yeah, I know. I hear you.
I hope it works out for all of them. I love to see people putting money in the game. I just was surprised. I'm not, you know. Listen, I'm also the guy that when Nick Zito and I were talking years ago and about a horse that was for sale, and I said that horse will never be worth that much money. I think he won the Breeders' Cup Classic, Mucho Macho Man. but to be fair, there were a few conversations Nick and I had. I remember I said to him once about a horse, and I said, they want how much money for that horse? You'll be able to claim that horse for $35,000 by the end of the year. And it was true. But listen, I mean, the fact is that, you know, that sometimes these pan out, you know, significantly. And
sure.
That, but, yeah.
I love it. Andy, I do, before we go, too, a couple minutes left. Marshall Cassidy.
Yeah, I didn't know Marshall, Steve, so I'm the wrong person to ask. Steve, I didn't know Marshall at all. You know, he was a caller in New York for a long time. I didn't have any relationship with Marshall. My condolences to his family, Steve. There's nothing else for me to say. I really have nothing else to say. You know, nothing. You know, it was everybody had nothing but great things to say on Marshall. The universal theme was he's an unbelievably nice guy. I think we said hi to each other about five times. And
I also did not get a chance. But I certainly when I started to become a fan in the 80s, I mean, his calls, you know, they're kind of ingrained. It's amazing how you associate certain voices. So we had Dave Johnson yesterday, and had nice
Dave Marshall backed up Dave, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Chick Anderson as well.
Yeah,
when Chick came in after Dave.
Yeah, it was nice to
talk
to
Dave too. He became the announcer when Chick Anderson died. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, he died pretty young, right? He had a heart attack, I think, right?
I think that's right. They.
Dave Johnson was the first racing celebrity I was ever excited to see, I think. I remember meeting him once as a very young at Saratoga, thinking, oh my God, it's the guy that calls the Derby.
That's another voice that I asked Dave about, you know, being a national, you know, the...
Well, Dave was the guy. Yeah. I mean, back then, Dave was the guy. Great race caller. Terrific guy, too. I like Dave a lot.
And you know what's amazing is his voice. His voice is the absolute same, and he's right. He said he's approaching 80, and he sounds just as vibrant.
Yeah, he does. You're right. No, he does. I agree. It's funny, but it's true. Yeah. No. Yeah. And then I guess Chick Anderson took over calling the Derby from Dave, right? I want to say, is that right?
That would make sense. there was also a couple of years, or maybe when the Battaglia, there's a couple of derbies that you, whenever you pull them up, you get Battaglia's call.
Well, you might get the call from the track.
Yeah, as opposed to the, you know, the ABC.
Well, I mean, I just hear that a lot. I mean, there you can pull up derbies and get Travis's call.
Well, I know, I know, but I
you get Travis's call.
I do wonder if Battaglia didn't get a year or two in there
that I would have no memory
on the network. I'm not sure.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't.
Really going out with a bang here.
Horseman Don from Delta Downs. They got a big day tomorrow.
Okay, good. Bring him on.
We're going to. Andy, this was great. I appreciate it. And we're looking forward to the weekend. This should be, Saturday should be really good with fairgrounds folded into the coverage. So looking forward to it.
It's that time of the year when there's usually at least one track having a big day. So that's fun. Yeah. All right, Steve. See you later.
I appreciate it. Andy Serling, everybody. And we'll stay here and we'll get Horseman Don. As Don Stevens is known, just pulling up the, let me see, January, February, what's the 13th, right? So a state bred steak in New York on Saturday and Sunday. You got the Broadway and the Gander and then the Holly Hughes, the three steaks over the weekend. And Case, just in case you don't have it, let me send you Don's number. Because I think, there we go. Here it is. All right. Bear with me for 1 second, because he's got the office. I don't know which one you've got. We talked to him, I think, in November last, as the season was getting started. You fine? Yeah? No? Here we go. There you go. Don Stevens. Beautiful. Don Stevens will join us next. That buys me enough time to pull out the... Oh, boy. This is the worst when I'm looking for the Delta. Don, good morning. Don Stevens joins us. Don, there we go. I was digging through a stack of PPs because I had the overnight with the stakes, and so now I didn't know where it went, but I've got it now. And you know, usually it's premier night, but it's going to be premier day tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Things change a lot here at Delta Downs since Hurricane Laura back in August. You know, we had a lot of damage and had to overcome that. We pushed the season back, and of course the lights were damaged so bad we had to take them all down. So we're racing during the day, and I think the management made a good decision to run Mondays through Thursdays. Less tracks out there to compete with instead of running on weekends during the day. We just can't compete with tracks like that. So they made a good choice, and we've had good handle. We did over 2 million yesterday. Last week, 2 days, we did about 2.5 million on Monday and Tuesday last week. So things are going well. Pools are good, and we're getting ready for our richest day of the year on Wednesday tomorrow.
Well, and I wanted to make sure to get out ahead of it so that when people listen to the replay tomorrow morning and to the archive and the podcast later on this afternoon and evening, you know, they're out ahead of it as opposed to, you know, waiting till tomorrow to talk to you, because it really is an attractive card, and I'm glad you gave everybody a little bit of a, you know, a look back at the way the season has gone, because every time I've looked, it does feel like, you know, it's been a good season. And, you know, you mentioned having to carve out a different spot in everybody's consciousness. And that's not easy.
No, it's not easy at all, because over the years we've been solidly a nighttime track. We've gotten a really group of loyal followers, you know, at night, guys that go to work during the day and play at night. And when you're playing during the day, during weekdays, you got, you know, guys who are playing during the day that are maybe older, retired, they play every day. They're a different crowd. It's definitely a different crowd.
Well, when it comes to the Louisiana breds, though, that fill the entry box for these kinds of cards, at whether it's at Delta, at Evangeline, or Fairgrounds, a lot of familiar names. Of course, there's also the up-and-comers, but it's a nice slate. Let's wade into it. Now we'll do it chronologically leading up to the championship. And the $100,000 star for the three-year-old Phillies going a mile.
Yeah, what are you looking at that? You know what race that is? I've got all my PPs in front of me here. I'm trying to figure that out.
It's the third race.
Third race. Okay, yeah. Third race. Here we go. All right. Yeah, it's a short field, but I see it as a two-horse race. You know, you've got Australasia, who's been perfect in two starts, and we don't know how good she really is. She dominated in the Louisiana Jewel here, Delta, January 12th, after breaking her maiden over at Fairgrounds. She's faced State Bred Company both times, and she'll do it again today. But, of course, Brad Cox, I think it's his only starter on the program. And if I look, he's got 1,499 wins, so this could be a milestone for him, 1,500. And Diego Sainz will be in the saddle for the second straight time. So, obviously, she's won over the track, and she's been here. That's a big advantage. But Scylla, obviously a daughter of California Chrome, coming out of the Grade 1 Frisette at Belmont back in October, is going to get a lot of attention. She ran third, but in a six-horse field. But just the California Chrome, Belmont, Grade 1, Gerard Melanson, she's going to get a lot of look in here. So I think that's really comes down to almost a two-horse field.
The
two-horse race, I mean, yeah.
I would mention that when it comes to Cox, it is a Tuesday, so he may have seven starters somewhere today. There's no guarantee. That might be win number 1,504.
For him, it might, the way he reels them off, that's for sure.
It's pretty funny. There's a few. There's also, of course, some starter type races, and there's a starter going as the fourth. So let's jump to the Prince, which is the three-year-old boys going the flat mile.
Yeah, the fourth race, the Prince. Yeah, this is an interesting race. I mean, I went with the seven horse in here, Man Camp, maybe a little bit different than some folks. This horse is 9 of 12 here at Delta. Gerard Melanson in the saddle, obviously. His nickname is G-Money. He knows how to get the money when the money's on the line. And by the way, I just looked online at Equibase. Brad Cox, his next starter is tomorrow here at Delta. He doesn't have any.
How about
today,
that? How you go?
Yeah, there you go. So we're all over that. Anyway, yeah, we've got Man Camp in there. Gerard's ridden him. I knew I saw that somewhere yesterday, and I thought, oh, no, does he have starters today? But he does it, so it's good. Anyway, yeah, we're going to go with Man Camp. Obviously, this race, you're talking about the fourth race, right?
Actually, I jumped. I jumped over the fourth. The fourth is a starter, but if you've got a play in there, go ahead.
Well, I'm just using three horses in the pick four, the 7-5 and the 3 Man Camp, Luring Actor, who I think is going to be heavily played, and then the three horse, Madeline's Wild Max, of course, Carl Broberg. Can't throw him out of anything over this track. We got the early pick five and early pick four. We added a pick five a few weeks ago. I don't know if you know that. That
yes.
Starts in race one. The early pick four now starts in race two, and the late pick four is going to have a 50,000 guarantee tomorrow. So the guarantee pool, 50,000 on the last four races, 7 through 10. So I just want to throw that out so everybody sees that. But, yeah, the Prince is the fifth race, and in there I've got the 7 standing, the perfect on top. He ran a perfect race, no pun intended, or actually pun intended, January the 11th in the Legacy, and that was just a really impressive race with Ashley Broussard. She rides a lot of Lee Thomas horses. She has over the years. They're a great team here at Delta Downs. This horse can, it's caught two wet tracks in a turf race in the debut, and tomorrow we're actually probably expecting a little bit of rain, so that might play to the advantage of Standing Perfect, who's had some experience on the wet track.
Yeah, the weather down there, Don, it's got to be a little maddening,
to say the least. You know, they're saying now next to Friday or this this coming Friday, it's going to be in the 20s, and we could have snow. And they said it possibly could go down to the teens. Can you believe that? Today it's supposed to be 76. So you're right. You never know. You never know in Louisiana.
Holy
cow. Yep.
That's crazy.
Crazy.
Unbelievable. Well, the the three-year-olds give way to the older horses in the sixth. And the sprint is going to have, I'm going to assume the shortest price of the afternoon. No parole for Tom Avis.
Oh yeah, I mean, how do you, you know, I don't know how you make money in this race, because I mean, barring something totally unforeseen, he looks like he runs all over this field. Grade one winner, won the Woody Stevens three back. Of course, that was going seven furlongs. Most recently ran in the Phoenix at Keeneland on October 2nd. You know, it's just on paper, you just look down and you say, nobody can beat this horse. But it's a horse race. They've got to open the gate. They've got to run it. They've got to run the five furlongs. Anything can happen. We have seen some upsets in this race over the past. But I'm going to obviously, you know, key him in everything. Just a free spot. You just got to use it if you're playing multi-race wagers.
Well, and there are two things, two horses to talk about. There's, you know, the veteran seven-year-old for Alan Landry, Laughing Saint Song, who has certainly run races that, you know, are fast enough. And Ron Fischot's got that Birdie's Galaxy that also has got a couple of performances, a handful of efforts that, you know, that would contend. So if no parole, you know, stubs the toe, as it were, you know, he's been away, what? He's been away 6 months, five months.
Yeah, but he's working tremendously. I have a lot of respect for Tom Amos. And if those three horses, and you're talking about, they're in my picks. All those horses are my picks. The only one didn't mention was the seven Double Barrel Man. And again, Carl Broberg, this horse does not have the early speed that the other three have, but if they go ding-dong in 21 and change and somebody gives way, you might play him underneath maybe in your exotics to maybe get a little value in here. Not sure, but that horse is going to be running late. The other three are all going to be burning it right out of the gate.
Fair point. About the pace angle. No, I'm glad. I suppose I got to mention the Delhomme product with the it's all football all the time with that team. Set Hutt the ex-clown, right? That's
yeah. Well, there's an football interesting term. Story about that horse. I tell you about. I talked to Delhomme a year or so ago over to Evangelum. This horse was running a stakes race over there, and he said, and even told me, I did an on-camera interview with him, and he told me off-camera, too, ex-clown refers to a play, a football
sure.
play.
Yep.
And he used to play for of course, the Carolina Panthers, and clown was the nickname for Steve Smith, the receiver. And in the playoffs back in, I think, 03, I can't remember what year it was, 06, they were in overtime in St. Louis against the Rams, and the play was ex-clown, and it was to Steve Smith, and it was like the first play of overtime, and he throws a 69-yard touchdown to Steve Smith, and that was the play, ex-clown.
And you hear it, you still hear it referred to as a pattern. You hear, you know, the commentators pretty regularly refer to ex-clown.
Yep.
Yeah,
pretty interesting. Yeah, I love all their football terms they use for their horse names. It's great.
The distaff, premier distaff for the fillies and mares, and full field of 10 in here. And you got Netta Bear for Alan Landry as the 2-1 favorite. But this feels pretty competitive, this group.
Well, it really is. And I actually started off in this race handicap looking at number four, Snowball. And then for some reason, I got that horse dropped all the way down to third after looking at it really too long. You know what they say, you know, too long, you think wrong. But anyway, Snowball is very accomplished, has 229,000 earnings for Sam Bro. Diego Sainz is up. She's on the turf last time. I think you can kind of throw that out. The race before, she was on the mud. When she's going right, she's going right. She had won three in a row to Evangeline and LAD earlier in 2020, and I think she may come back with a big performance. But, right, I do like Net Bear, the sixth, and also Saints and Muskets in here. Now, this horse won the Lookout two back, and that was a restricted non-winner of a stakes race, so you kind of downplay that a little bit, but came back with another big effort in the Magnolia, a much tougher field in there, and she showed a lot of guts in that spot, and she loves this track. That's another Alan Landry trainee.
I'm just kind of thumbing through. Snowball. How about Brett Calhoun's DeWildcat filly? She's gone DeWild.
Yeah, she's gone D-Wild. Yeah, Alex Berzer will be in the saddle now. This is his first season riding here at Delta Downs. Been very impressed. He's been heating up lately. Of course, he's a veteran rider. He's got thousands of wins, but he's never ridden on this circuit. He's actually a Kansas boy and born in Kansas, and so was I. So anyway, we struck up a conversation a while back. This horse is coming in off a win. It's had three wins in the last five starts. Needed the last one. I like a horse to have a start over the track before running their best, and this one did win, but it was a sloppy surface. Actually, that was at Fairgrounds last time. Did get a run, what I meant, two starts back on a wet fast track here, Delta running fifth behind Saints and Muskets. But if Brett Calhoun's involved, you know this horse is going to come in ready for the effort, and that horse will be a bit of a price, I believe.
Yeah, 12-1 morning line, and there's a little something to like. I'm interested. Now, this is a fun race. The favorite, the favorite's deserving, and you know, you mentioned yours as well. I'm going to come back to that horse tomorrow afternoon.
And not only that, that's the first leg of that guaranteed 50,000 late pick four. So you might want to, you know, start off a little spread out here and take a shot with a horse like that. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, she's at the least she's like a B type in here, and I'm just looking. I wanted to look up just pulling up some figures. I just confirmed something. So, yeah, the three for me. She's gone to Wild. Feels like a nice value key in that seventh race, the Premier Distaff. The eighth is the Matron, and this is the Fillies and Mares going short. And Mr. Al's Gal back 7-5.
Yeah, this horse is interesting. I've watched her throughout her career. She's made over $700,000.
Yeah.
She's tough as nails. She always gives it an honest effort. She's 5 out of 8 here at Delta. Jose Camejo, the first starter of the season for him here. Of course, he's been here in years past. Veteran of Venezuela, South America, and super nice guy. He used to be a jockey, got hurt at Evangeline a few years ago and turned to training. And Tim Thornton in the saddle. So, yeah, this horse is going to get a lot of play, be a heavy favorite. I actually put that one second in my picks behind Southern Beauty with Diego Sainz, the 7. A Brett Calhoun trainee, just a romping winner last time out. I think this was good in the form cycling coming up to a big race. It's going to take everything to beat Mr. Al's Gal. But she hasn't been here in a while. So she'd been running at Fairgrounds, of course, on the East Coast this past summer on the turf. She's pretty versatile. It'll be hard to beat her, but if you do, I think you'll be rewarded in this spot.
I got to ask you about, one of the angles that is worth, at least noting. The horses, that are coming back to state bred company that had been, facing open. And the horse on the rail, making a second start for Juan La Rosa, 49 model. And those races at Remington against open company, mostly on turf. But then that 25, that race that she ran for 25, that's a race that could impact this. And she's 8-1.
Right. She's my third pick in here, and I would consider playing her in the pick four as well. She's had that one start over the track, and again, sometimes it takes two, and she was in an open bred state, the Orleans, running a quick time, 58-2. Nobody's gone 57 and change on this track this season. During the day, the track has been a little different, a little deeper, and we haven't had the times quite as quick as they have in the past. So that was a very fast race, and it gave her some experience here, and you're right, she gets back in with state breds. I don't like the rail post for her, but at that price, she might be worth a shot. She's my third pick in there.
Yep, there we go. All right, so you and I got a couple of things in common here. Let's look at the feature and the championship, 125,000 mile and a 16th, and a couple of veteran performers, Chris Richard and G Money, under pressure, deserving 5-2 favorite.
Oh, my gosh. This horse, one of my favorites on the backside when I go back to see the trainers and jockeys, and 763,000 lifetime earnings. Won this race last year, has won 6 of 13 over the track, been racing at Fairgrounds the last two, and just got nosed out by Pound for Pound. They knock heads last time out. It's the same group of horses. Grand Luigi, the one, also won this race 2 years ago and comes out of a grade 3. at Fairgrounds, so you can't fault that horse. And then I actually went against myself. I first looked at this race and thought, under pressure, looks obvious, pound for pound, Grand Luigi. I went with Steve Asmussen's horse, the 8, just lively in here. And I know I'm kind of going against myself. This horse has won 4 out of 5 at this distance with 1 second. That's almost perfection. This horse should be running late. There should be somewhat of a pace here. Grand Luigi at the rail, I think, may have to go. I think pound for pound's going to go. There may be a pretty honest pace here. And from the outside, Joel Dominguez, not the top guy you think of Delta with Gerard Melanson, but an excellent rider. He won the crown at Louisiana Downs this past summer. And, of course, Asmussen, you know, I just went with that one at 5-1 to find a little value. It wouldn't surprise me at all if any one of the other three won it.
I'll give you an 8-1 shot. I think deserves some attention. Who's been very consistent, and again doing it against open company. That double star for Bob Schultz.
Yeah, I saw that. I just looked down and I looked at all those sprints. You know, I mean, he's gone 7 furlongs. He hasn't gone a route for quite some time, and that was here at Delta Downs way back in 2019. That just kind of scared me off that horse. But, yeah, you may be onto something. I don't know. Jose Guerrero has brought in a lot of long shots this season. He's a long shot rider this season here at Delta Downs. I'd say the top one.
Yeah, and I, you know, the stretch out on that surface, and I haven't looked at I got to look at some pace. Let me glance at my pace side of things here. I got to go from one page to another. Here we go, because that's the 9th, right? I'll tell you what, he's going to make the lead, and
out of those sprints, that's what I'm saying. With him providing the pace here, that's another reason I went with my horse, but I think Grand Luigi's got to get out of the gate. He can't get trapped coming back, and there's some other possible speed in here, so I don't know. I mean, we'll have to see. You could be right. He may be a wire-to-wire candidate in this spot.
At the least, they're going to have to run him down. It's a terrific card. Anything from the smaller stakes that we didn't touch on? Anybody you love in the 10th or anywhere else?
Yeah, the 10th race, I actually have a price play in there that's out of this galaxy for Dale White. He's kind of had a slow season for him. Everything seems to be running second and third. But this horse has done some damage here. Comes in off a second-place effort. Was on a wet track, 2-back, ran 4th, but behind a really tough horse, a multiple winner on the season named Tabia. And this one's going to stretch out a little bit in this spot, too. So at a price, I'm going to use the 9 out of this galaxy, try to wrap up the pick 4 with a price horse.
I like it. Absolutely. The 9 in the 10th, and Horseman Don, everybody. Follow on Twitter, and look forward to, well, action today, too, but tomorrow, and the premiere day, not premiere night. Don, thanks so much. I'm delighted we got this in.
Thank you so much, Steve. Good luck tomorrow.
Delta Downs, everybody. The Sabine Sand. We love it. This was a fun morning. And Don Stevens, Andy Serling earlier, Rich Averill. Good luck to Rich and the Matisses with Ladies Island at the sale. Peter Urton got a lot from Peter. And the important Slaughter conversation. And hopefully we can rally the forces, all right? Diana Pakulski and Chris Hyde joined us. Good luck today if you're playing. Tuesday action. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9 here on Sirius XM. Archive, podcast, etc. later on the website. And back tomorrow, Wednesday. Sid, Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus. We got a lot of pedigree work to do tomorrow. Plus, catch up with maybe with Ed and Seth and Pat Cummings tomorrow with the Racing Future, industry future conversation. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.